In a summer when fantasy movies and sequels have dominated the theaters, but not necessarily caught fire at the box office, a movie opens today that's grounded firmly in reality. It's called Seabiscuit, and is the story of the racehorse whose hard luck story, harder luck jockey, and incredible will to persevere against long odds made him the hero of millions during the Depression. By the way, the original movie made about this famous horse, 1949's The Story of Seabiscuit, is shown tonight on the Turner Classic Movies cable network. In the new film, Seabiscuit, Chris Cooper plays the role of Seabiscuit's trainer. It's the latest in a winning run for Cooper himself. Before this, he's grabbed rave notices for such offbeat roles as the homophobe in American Beauty and the orchid thief in Adaptation. Terry spoke with Cooper earlier this year, shortly after he won an Oscar for Adaptation.
So the character you're playing, John LaRoche, is the orchid thief. He's somebody who, you know, spends a lot of time in swamps looking for rare orchids. He has a very colorful and mysterious past in which he's done his share of exaggerating and lying, and has been a real loser in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But he's
mm-hmm.
he's obsessive and gifted at the same time, and you know. The Meryl Streep character in the movie is trying to figure out what to make of him.
There was a scene where Susan Orlean and I are driving in the truck at night, and he was becoming a little philosophical about why people spent time around him. And he began to realize that these people that spent time around him were probably very lonely. And that just sort that did play into Susan Orlean's life at that time. She was thinking over her relationship with her husband. She was not passionate about anything. And that turned out to be a very, very touching, good choice.
Let's hear that scene that you just mentioned in the truck with Meryl Streep. And this is my guest, Chris Cooper, with Meryl Streep in a scene from Adaptation.
So I got married, and me and my beautiful new wife, my now ex-wife, bitch, opened up a nursery. People started coming out of the woodwork to ask me stuff, admire my plants, admire me. I think some people were really spending time with me because they were lonely. And you know why I like plants?
Huh?
Because they're so mutable. Adaptation is a profound process. It means you figure out how to thrive in the world.
Yeah, but it's easier for plants. I mean, they have no memory. You know, they just move on to whatever's next. With a person, adapting is almost shameful. It's like running away.
Now, for your role in Adaptation, you had to do prosthetics for your mouth because the character has missing mm-hmm. teeth, which is a part of his biographical story. Is this the first time you had to do the whole prosthetic thing for a role and go through the hours of fitting it on and gluing it on before each day's shooting?
Yeah, certainly the mouthpiece. And I mean, it was just a very expensive set of Halloween teeth that fit very securely over my teeth, and you did have to make extra space in the mouth cavity to, you know, work around those new set of teeth. But I have, I think I've done three other characters who were burn victims that involve quite a lot of, you know, exterior prosthetic work around the face. But that was the first time I ever had to use the mouthpiece, and it did take some real getting used to. I had several pair a month and a half to work with, and I'd walk around the house with them and just talk with my wife and talk with my son's caregiver and talk with my son, and they just had to put up with it. But I got very used to it, very, very comfortable.
I know your son has cerebral palsy. Did he get while you were wearing this thing, or why you looked so weird all of a sudden?
Yeah, he does. His best vision is to the side, and I would get these very side looking expressions of "Oh, Dad, you're doing it again," you know? and he'd had little giggles here and there, but he puts up with it. It's very normal around the house.
You grew up in Kansas City,
mm-hmm.
and your father was a doctor, and I think the family also had a cattle ranch.
Yes,
that wasn't your home, but you were there summers. So how did that work, that there was a cattle ranch that your family owned, but it's not where you lived?
We lived in the city in Kansas City, Missouri, and the cattle ranch was in Kansas City, Kansas, and we had a hired hand who did looked over the cattle, and he was also a security guard at Leavenworth Prison, so he carried two jobs. And it was during the winter months. In some respects, it's not that difficult. You just need to keep shelter for the cattle, and you need to feed them, and they're pretty much on their own throughout the winter. And then in summertime, there is haying. In the spring, there's calving season, and there's a lot of barbed wire fence to put up or repair. So I would spend springs and summers out there, and weekends throughout the year.
Everything I know about cattle, I learned as a child by watching Rawhide, the TV series about the cattle drivers that gave Clint Eastwood his start. Now, I realize that's about the cattle drive, which is the next step after the cattle ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch Rawhide when you were a kid?
I watched Rawhide on occasion. I was more of a rifleman.
Oh, that was a great show, too.
Myself.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
But it didn't teach you as much about cattle.
We had the cattle drive when the mamas are ready to drop their calves. You have to keep an eye on them, and then 6 months later, when the calves, they call them 6 months heifers, that's when you start to wean them from their mamas, and that's another roundup to separate the cows from the calves. And then at that time, you also do the castrating and the vaccinating and the tattooing, which is a ear identification number for the cattle.
Did you like that work?
I loved it. It was either, at that time, it was either acting or ranching, and they are obviously two extremes, but I just loved the life there, and it was a very pleasant way to live, I thought.
So your father was a doctor, and he owned a cattle ranch. What did he think about you trying to become an actor? Did he prefer that you become, a doctor-lawyer type of professional?
Well, Dad, knowing his own profession, he never pushed my being a doctor. His hours were ungodly, going from hospital rounds in the morning to the office. Then he was one of the last doctors to do house calls. And then he would be called at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning for emergencies. And I saw the toll that it sort of took on my mother's and father's relationship, that they were in love with each other until the day he died. It was not an easy life. He was a very dedicated man. However, when I mentioned that I was interested in being an actor, he really thought that was about the silliest thing a person could do for a living. And then once I started getting work, he did become very, very supportive. And I think he was... had a touch of pride in seeing some of the early work.
You didn't start making movies until you were, 35, and John Sayles cast you in the lead of Mate One, which is about a coal miner strike in West Virginia.
Right.
Are there things that you learned making your first movie with John Sayles and also doing Lone Star with John Sayles? That's the movie I first really noticed you in, Lone Star. I thought, wow, this is somebody to keep an eye on.
Yeah, well, early on in shooting Mate One, that being the first film, I was over the moon, you know, just being involved for a first film. There could be nothing better than working with James Earl Jones and David Strathairn and some of the other actors. What I did learn was early on to really conserve energy. I was looking over the shoulder of John and Haskell Wexler, the cinematographer, and in scenes that I was not even involved with, just watching other actors work, watching the crew work, the technicians, trying to get an understanding of lights and lenses, every aspect of filmmaking, and I was burning myself out, you know, for the scenes that I had to do. That was so truly, that was an outstanding lesson, was to do your work and leave the rest of the work to the other cast and crew and save your energy, because there's a lot more work to come up.
Well, the next big role that you're in is in Seabiscuit, the mm-hmm. movie based on the best-selling book about the racehorse. Tell us a little bit about your role in that.
The character is Tom Smith, and he's a bit of a mystery man. There's not very much information about him. But he was one of the last of the cowboys. At the turn of the century, he would rope and break and sell Mustangs for a living. And once the cowboy era came to an end, they were out of work. And so what do they do to make a living? That's when the idea of, what do you call it, those dude ranches, when the dude ranches came into existence, cowboys would work there, or they could work at Wild West shows, and that's indeed what Tom Smith did. Then he moved on to farrier work, that's working, you know, working with horses, and he did a bit of training, horse training at Mexican racetracks. But a man who I think probably felt more comfortable and spent more time with animals than he did human beings.
So, although the Western era on TV and in the movies is over, your cattle ranch experience is actually paying off again.
Again, yeah, sure did.
Well, Chris Cooper, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, very welcome. Thank you, Terry.
Chris Cooper stars in the new film Seabiscuit. He spoke with Terry Gross earlier this year.